Welcome back to the second hour of America Now. If you're just joining us, we're glad you've tuned in. If you're listening online at RadioAmericaNow.com, and that's America with a K, or GCNLive.com, be sure to choose Channel 3 to listen to the show in its entirety. As always, if you'd like to ask a question or join in the discussion, please give us a call at 800-259-5791. And now, here's your host, Barb Adams.
All right, everybody. Think about this. Earthquakes, volcanoes, and floods. Oh, my. We've got record flooding in Thailand. We've got heat waves. We've got drought. We seem to have massive global changes going on. Right here today in Colorado, where I live, it was in the mid to upper 80s for this time of year in mid-October. Our trees are still green here, except for up in the high country where they've already churned and are losing the leaves. But down here, they're still green. Everything's still green. My roses are still blooming. Things seem to be changing all over. And a lot of people say this is a very natural cycle. But a lot of other people say that it's because Planet X is heading our way. But is Planet X real? And is there evidence that if it is, that it is heading our way, causing current Earth and climate changes, as well as explaining past global catastrophes? My next guest this evening, John DiNardo, has been studying the ancient historical and modern scientific evidence regarding Planet X, and he believes we have not been told the truth. He's here tonight to share what he knows about Planet X and what we need to know in order to prepare for these global changes. Welcome to America Now, John.
Hello, Barb. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming. There are a lot of things going on in the world right now. What are some of the indicators that you feel are really pointing to best evidence that Planet X is out there, for one, and is heading our way?
Well, we have a great deal of evidence. We have massive meteorological and geological extreme events occurring, as you had outlined. Weather, the storms are all severe, and every type of weather condition you can imagine has been severe. We have had record wind storms over the last decade, particularly over the last 7 years, as well as record flooding in just about all areas of the country and the world. Even Texas, which people know to be lately to be stricken by the worst drought ever in its history, Texas has undergone serious flooding, major flooding, over the past 7 years. But people have forgotten that because, you know, we tend to forget one event and concentrate on what is currently the weather condition. But I have about 250 hours of severe weather reports from the Weather Channel that I had been watching the Weather Channel every day. Spent many hours watching it and recording, videotaping severe weather reports. And we've had this record flooding in the state of Washington and even in California. In Utah, which is a desert state primarily, there's been such severe rain and floods, which we have captured on videotape, that streams became raging rivers with houses that were far away from these small streams became inundated, and the sea became the soil beneath the houses. And these usually dry areas became undermined, and the houses were actually plunged into the raging river. And I have that on videotape, as well as many countless other types of disastrous weather conditions from around the country and around the world, from Europe. And examples are so abundant and widespread that I just could not detail them except to give you some that come to mind right now. I do have a radio program that actually uses these clips, these weather reports to indicate to people that the world is in serious condition. And some of the evidence beyond what has happened meteorologically is actual announcement we have from the federal government of the United States, NASA, going back to 1983. And I have in front of me an actual photocopy of a newspaper report, the New York Times, which I got from my county library's archives. I photocopied this article as well as several other articles from major news publications. In addition to the New York Times, I have one from the Washington Post, the second largest newspaper in the United States, and another from U.S. News and World Report, the third largest news magazine in the country. But I'll just read a clip or two to prove to you that this has actually been reported by NASA through the New York Times. It's January 30th, 1983. This article that I'm reading, the title is Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X by John Noble Wilford. Quote, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing the two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought planet X. Evidence assembled in recent years has led several groups of astronomers to renew the search for the 10th planet. And the article goes on to tell about the infrared astronomical satellite that was launched by the U.S., Britain, and the Netherlands. This is way back in 1983, in the beginning of 83, and it was sent up because its infrared eyes were able to detect this non-visible light-emitting massive body that was way out there beyond the outer reaches of our solar system. And the reason why they knew it existed was because of its gravitational pull on the outer planets. Every time Uranus and Neptune would make a revolution around the sun, at some particular point, the orbit would be observed to, the orbits of these two outer planets, Uranus and Neptune, were observed to be disturbed, perturbed, that is, plucked outward and downward. And they knew that the only thing that would cause this would be a gravitational force so great that it must be caused by some massive body. And this goes back, the article states that back in the early 1800s, the astronomers noticed these, what they call perturbations or disturbances of the orbits of these outer planets. And it's goes on to say that they act serious. There was a worldwide search by the astronomers of the world to actually detect this planet. That search reached a high peak back in around the year 1900 when astronomer Percival Lowell erected the Lowell Observatory in Arizona. And he named this mysterious object way back in 1900. He named it Planet X, and that's how it got its name. However, this going back to
hold your thoughts
days,
hold your thoughts there, John. We've got a commercial break coming up. All right, when we continue, John DiNardo, Planet X.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
All right, my guest for this hour of America Now is John DiNardo, and he's talking about Planet X and the possibility that it's incoming and causing the current global changes, as well as being able to relate it back to past global catastrophes. And John, I've got to ask you one quick question, though. You know, when you were talking about the perturbations, didn't NASA and actually a lot of other scientists and astronomers discovered that, especially with Neptune, there was an error in their calculations on that, and then as well as the 84 IRAS object and then the 1992 body, which both were reported to be supposedly one and the same. How could they be the same if one was supposedly a brown dwarf and the other one's supposed to be basically the size of Jupiter? And just a couple of basic questions there.
When you refer to 1992, is that Dr. Robert S. Harrington's?
Yes, I believe so.
Observation?
Mm-hmm.
First taking the 1983 observation made by the U.S. Infrared Astronomical Satellite, in this article that I'm reading, they are saying that this infrared astronomical satellite was being launched primarily to find this planet X, this
right.
object that was pulling on the outer planets. And in the article, what they state is let me find this particular quotation, recent calculations. New York Times again, January 30th, 1983, quote, recent calculations by the United States Naval Observatory have confirmed the orbital perturbation exhibited by Uranus and Neptune, which Dr. Thomas C. Van Vlandern, an astronomer at the observatory, says could be explained by a single undiscovered planet. He and a colleague, Dr. Robert Harrington, calculate that this 10th planet should be 2 to 5 times more massive than Earth and have a highly elliptical orbit that takes it some 5 billion miles beyond that of Pluto, hardly next door, but still within the gravitational influence of the Sun. And that's really an important quote to remember. They say it's hardly next door, but still it's within the gravitational influence of the Sun. Now, this statement of the mass of the object being,
two to five
times more massive than Earth. Now, that is evidently way underestimated. Why Dr. Harrington stated that, my only explanation would be that NASA was told to try to downplay the seriousness of this object, the size. It could be a threat by its size. It could be a great threat to Earth. Not that it would hit Earth, but that if it's, as stated here, within the gravitational influence of the Sun, it is inevitable that it would be drawn in by our Sun, because it's being pulled in just as a rock or any falling object would be pulled in by the Earth, the Earth's gravitational field. Yeah. It's just inexorable that one smaller object would be drawn by gravity to a larger object. Likewise, the Sun would compel this object to be drawn in toward it. So my only conclusion is that NASA was told to play down this threat, and thus they really underestimated the size as, quote, 2 to 5 times more massive than Earth. Now, get this. This is what I'll read on, and you'll see the tremendous contradiction here. In the same article now, more credence was given to the hypothesis that a, quote, brown dwarf star accounts for this mysterious force. Okay, a brown dwarf star. Now, if you look up the definition of a brown dwarf star, it's going to be at least the size of Jupiter. I would think, from what I've read, the minimum, very smallest, puniest brown dwarf star would be about 3 Jupiter masses. Now, one Jupiter mass is 318 Earth masses.
Right.
318 Earth masses. So
I thought a brown dwarf star, though, if I remember right, though, it would only be about 4 to 8 Earth masses, right?
Well, from what I've read, the smallest brown dwarf star size or mass has quite a range of possibilities. And the very smallest, from what I've read, is about 3 Jupiter masses. Now, some people might really stretch that to a very much smaller size, which would be 1 Jupiter mass. But from what I've read, the smallest brown dwarf star is about three Jupiter masses, and the very largest could be as much as 100
Jupiter masses. Oh, my goodness, because Jupiter,
really,
as you say, that's beyond huge, because if Jupiter's 318 Earth masses, wow, that's
right. Now, this object is, I think conservatively we can say it's probably around 3 Jupiter masses, and I've gotten some estimations that that's probably pretty, you know, accurate, but it's really hard to pin down the size. But let's say we're being conservative now and underestimated. Keeping it conservatively estimated at 3 Jupiter masses, that's getting close to 1,000 Earth masses. So you can see now, this thing is 1,000 Earth masses. It's way out there, and obviously they can do the arithmetic. They can do the mathematical calculations and determine, well, if this thing is pulling the mass of Jupiter, on the mass of Uranus and Neptune, we pretty much know what their masses are, and we know how much of the perturbation is, then from that information we can calculate about how far out this object is. And that's why in this article, another article that I have here, I can dig it right out of my pile of articles, from the New York Times, too, and came from the previous year, 1982, when they launched the 2 space probes, Pioneer 10 and Pioneer 11. From that article, they say if it's a brown dwarf star, then it's so many millions of miles out beyond Pluto, and if it's a smaller object, then it's not quite so far out. Well, that just tells you that the object could be any particular conceivable distance out, but if it's out farther, then its mass must be much greater. Of course, it's all proportional. Now you asked about that discrepancy. Here you have this discrepancy where Dr. Harrington is underestimating it. Now Dr. Harrington dies mysteriously in 1992. Dr. Harrington, let me go back and explain to you what happened. Here we have 9 years later, after this object was actually discovered by the infrared astronomical satellite.
John, hold your thoughts there, John. We'll come back to the mysterious death of Dr. Robert S. Harrington when America Now continues with John DiNardo on Planet X.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
All right, I'm speaking with John DiNardo tonight about Planet X and the possibility that it is incoming and that the current Earth changes we're witnessing now and that may come are a consequence of Planet X. And John, when we left off, we were talking about the mysterious death of Dr. Robert S. Harrington. And as well, can you talk about, there have been a lot of, quote, murders and even massacres that have involved Planet X?
Well, right. I'll just finish up with this issue of Dr. Harrington's contradiction as to the size of this. In this New York Times article of January 30th, 1983, which heralds the launching of the infrared astronomical satellite, Dr. Harrington, the chief astronomer of the U.S. Naval Observatory, contradicted himself. First, he says this object is 2 to 5 times more massive than Earth. Then he goes on to say, along with all the other scientists, that quote, more credence is given to the hypothesis that a brown dwarf star accounts for this mysterious force. Well, a brown dwarf star, as we said, is conservatively estimated to be not 2 to 5 times more massive than Earth, but about 1,000 times more massive than Earth. So why would Dr. Harrington contradict himself? Well, I believe, and we don't really know why, but the fact is he did, and that indicates there's a cover-up going on. There's some attempt to suppress this information. And we go on and we find more evidence of this attempt to cover up this information about this massive brown dwarf star, which the scientists knew was a brown dwarf star. And 11 months after the launching of this infrared astronomical satellite, the satellite had indeed achieved its mission. It had discovered this mysterious tugging force that was occurring, known for 2 centuries to be occurring on the outer planets caused by this massive body. And the quote, the article from the second largest newspaper, front page, Washington Post, December 30th, exactly 11 months later, December 30th, 1983, this article I have in front of me, which I also photocopied from my county library. Washington Post front page, quote, mystery heavenly body discovered, possibly as large as Jupiter. Okay, so now they're saying, well, it's probably or possibly as large as Jupiter. That's a far cry from 2 to 5 Earth masses. The author of this front page New York Washington Post article is Thomas O'Toole. Quote, a heavenly body, possibly as large as the giant planet Jupiter, and possibly so close to Earth that it would be part of this solar system, has been found in the direction of the constellation Orion by an orbiting telescope aboard the U.S. infrared astronomical satellite. So mysterious is the object that astronomers do not know if it is a planet, a giant comet, a nearby protostar, that's a brown dwarf star, that never got hot enough to become a star, a distant galaxy so young that it is still in the process of forming its first stars, or a galaxy so shrouded in dust that none of the light cast by its stars ever gets through. Now, wait a minute. They're denying that they actually knew that this thing was Planet X. They stated it was Planet X. They stated they were sending up the infrared astronomical satellite in this Washington, New York Times article of 11 months earlier in January 30th, and now they're contradicting themselves and denying that Planet X was what was the object of their search. They're saying, we don't know what this thing is. Well, there you go. There's part of the cover-up. Again, it becomes very highly likely that the National Security Agency, which oversees and dominates all the government agencies, including NASA. NASA is under contract to remain silent, just as the CIA is under contract to remain silent about anything that they find. Well, they were hushed up and they were suppressed by the National Security Agency. And here's your evidence. Now they're denying what they had published widely in the New York Times 11 months earlier. And now they go on in this article in the Washington Post. They continue, quote, this is from a scientist. All I can tell you is that we don't know what it is, Dr. Jerry Neugebauer, IRAS chief scientist for California's Jet Propulsion Laboratory and director of the Palomar Observatory for the California Institute of Technology, said in an interview, quote, again, all I can tell you is that we don't know what it is. Now, that's how stupid do they think we are? They just told us 11 months earlier that it's Planet X. It's an object that's been known for 200 years by astronomers to be tugging on the outer planets. They said it had been given the formal name Planet X by the astronomical community for nearly 100 years, and now they're denying it. So there's evidence of a cover-up.
But John, wasn't originally Pluto given the name Planet X way back when?
No, actually, I'll read this New York Times and answer your question by quoting directly from the New York Times article, which I first started reading January 30th, 1983. Quote, the last time a serious search of the skies was made, it led to the discovery in 1930 of Pluto, the ninth planet. But the story begins more than a century before that, after the discovery of Uranus in 1781. By the English astronomer and musician William Herschel Until then, the planetary system seemed to end with Saturn, as astronomers observed Uranus, noting irregularities in its orbital path. Many speculated that they were witnessing the gravitational pull of an unknown planet. So began the first planetary search based on astronomers' predictions, which ended in the 1840s with the discovery of Neptune, almost simultaneously by English, French, and German astronomers. But Neptune was not massive enough to account entirely for the orbital behavior of Uranus. Indeed, Neptune itself seemed to be affected by a still more remote planet. In the late 19th century, two American astronomers, William Pickering and Percival Lowell, predicted the size and approximate location of this trans-Neptunian body, which Lowell called Planet X. You see, they're able to mathematically calculate the size of it based upon its gravitational pull. Continuing on, that was in 1900. Now, Percival Lowell had died. And then years later, Pluto was detected by Clyde Tombaugh working at Lowell's observatory, the late Percival Lowell's observatory in Arizona. Clyde Tombaugh, several astronomers, however, suspected it that it might not be the Planet X of prediction. Subsequent observations proved them right. Pluto was too small to change the orbits of Uranus and Neptune. The combined mass of Pluto and its recently discovered satellite Charon is only one-fifth that of Earth's moon. Can you imagine that? That's like a puny. I mean, one-fifth the size of the moon. The moon is what? One-fifth the size of Earth or something like that. So if this object is Pluto is one-fifth the size of the moon, that's quite small, extremely small.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ludicrous. This object that's pulling on Uranus and Neptune. Uranus and Neptune are gas giants. These are giant planets. In order to perturb them and pull them out of their orbit, it would take a brown dwarf star, just as stated by the astronomers in the New York Times of January 1983. But now they discovered it 11 months later, and all of a sudden somebody told them to hush this thing up, play it down, because we don't want to panic the public. And they said, well, we don't know what it is now. So it's a big lie. It's a transparent lie. They've been caught lying. And anybody who reads these two newspaper articles, you don't even have to be a scientist, can tell that they're lying and initiating a cover-up.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Why would they cover it up?
Well, like you say, why would they cover it up? John, we're heading into the commercial break, and when we come back, we've only got one more segment left before the end of the interview. I'd like you to talk about what's happening now because of Planet X. All right, we will continue with John DiNardo. If that's what it takes me, baby, to show how much you mean to me. It's John DiNardo, and we are talking about Planet X, and with it incoming, some of the global changes that we are now experiencing and those that may be happening. John, since we've only got a short period of time left, why don't you go ahead and talk about what and how... Evidently, we've lost John on the other end. We've lost the connection, so I apologize for that to the listeners. So I guess we won't be talking about some of those, some of the things that I have heard about, and of course a lot of people have been talking about, are with the incoming Planet X, that a lot of the volcanic activity we're seeing now, the volcanoes, many of the other types of global and climate experiences and changes are being attributed to Planet X. And of course, the universe is pretty much a plasma electrical system out there. And so with something that size, that mass coming in, even though we are not able to see it at this time, we will probably be feeling its effects. And supposedly we have been feeling its effects for quite some time. And again, we're trying to get a hold and see if we can reconnect to John here for this last segment. But cosmoplasmic physics and our okay, we've got John back. Sorry for that there, John. We lost you there for a second. So what I'd like to know is what's going on right now with the climate change and the global changes, John,
okay,
and what's coming, and
well,
how can we prepare?
Well, okay, we have to talk really fast. real quick, to answer your question about Dr. Harrington, he was evidently denied access to the sightings of Planet X following the discovery of Planet X by the infrared astronomical satellite in December of 1983, because Dr. Harrington, since 1983 until 1991, had to do his own calculations as to where this planet was. And he, in fact, in 1991, he said he was going to dispatch a telescope, which he did. He published a paper stating he was, we've got the paper on the internet, stating that he was dispatching a telescope to the southern hemisphere where this object could be viewed, to one of the U.S. Naval Observatories observatories down in Black Birch, New Zealand. And this telescope had taken the pictures and determined that this object was actually incoming to our solar system, which is a great threat. And Dr. Harrington was about to publish this information that he had sighted the object and it was incoming. Well, he didn't have to sight it if they had only given him access to the sightings by the infrared astronomical satellite between 1983 and 1991, but they did not. Anyway, Dr. Harrington mysteriously died just before he was about to make this announcement. He died very quickly of cancer in a couple of weeks. It's pretty obvious that cancer side was the cause of death. This has happened to many other people in political life. I could go on and name them, but I don't have enough time. Let me tell you what's going to happen. I have so much evidence to show. One thing I'm going to read to you: the Fatima, the third secret of Fatima, was given to the Pope in 1917 from the girls in Fatima, Portugal, who had seen this vision. They got a vision from an angel. Now, people don't believe this stuff, but here's what was covered up. It's so incredible and so, I'm going to be sarcastic and say it's so unbelievable and mythical that they actually covered it up. The Pope John Paul, the Pope Pius XII, was supposed to announce the third secret of Fatima, which had been kept secret since 1917. The fervent Catholics around the world were fervently awaiting the announcement by Pope Pius XII in 1960. That's when it was to be announced, the third secret of Fatima. Well, that never happened. It never happened, and people were amazed and disappointed to find out that this announcement was never made. So here we have an article now from a German magazine in Fulda, Germany. The name of the magazine is, it's hard to pronounce, but it's spelled STIMMEDESGLAUBENS. German magazine where the Pope had a conference with high-level prelates in the Catholic Church, and the question was asked, I'm going to read from this article, the Holy Father was asked, quote, what about the third secret of Fatima, which had not been revealed? Shouldn't it have already been published by 1960, unquote? Pope John Paul II replied, quote, given the seriousness of the contents, my predecessors in the Petrine office diplomatically preferred to postpone publication. He says his predecessor popes preferred to postpone publication so as not to encourage the world of communism to make certain moves. Well, that was the cover-up, that communism was the subject of this third secret. However, continuing on, quote, on the other hand, Pope John Paul II said, it should be sufficient for all Christians to know this. If there is a message in which it is written that the oceans will flood whole areas of the earth, and that from one moment to the next, millions of people will perish, truly, the publication of such a message is no longer something to be so much desired. End of quote.
Wow.
Now, what he's saying is that oceans are going to spill out of their basins. This was a real, true third secret of Fatima.
That's a little scary. How soon is this all supposed to happen, John?
Well, we're seeing the beginning signs right now. And nobody really knows. No human being really has an estimation of the exact time. Only God. But we're seeing what's happening now, the ramp up. I can tell you, Zechariah Sitchin, the great world, the late, recently passed away, astronomer, archaeologist, and scientist, highly respected, wrote the book, The 12th Planet.
Yep, great book.
Remember that title, The 12th Planet.
Oh, great book.
Right, he quoted from many of the ancient researchers, and what they found out thousands of years ago, that the first sign, one of the first signs is epic flooding. Well, that's exactly what we've been having for the last 7 years. I've been videotaping it on the Weather Channel. I mean, every country in the world, every state in the union virtually has, I've got videotaped as having epic flooding. Do you know there was snow in Jerusalem? I got that on videotape. I think it wasn't even during the winter time. It was sometime during, as I recall, during the spring or the autumn. Anyway, he goes on to say one of the first signs is epic flooding. We've had the epic flooding for quite a while, and we're seeing now the major signs. We're seeing earthquakes and volcanic eruptions increasing tremendously. The government has really covered up the big increase in earthquakes, and I won't even go in, I don't have the time to go into all the details of how they've covered up the earthquakes, but I would expect that probably this year, before this year is out, maybe even within a week or so, when this comet Elenine, which is probably one of the accompanying bodies that is gravitationally being drawn in by this huge massive body, you might say that Elenine might be on the vanguard of it. It's probably, you know, a good-sized comet, but it's in no way is Planet X, and hopefully it will not cause any serious gravitational or electromagnetic problems with Earth. However, it's coming by and reaching its closest alignment with Earth, I think, in a few days. I'm worried about the Cumbre Vieja volcano in the Canary Islands off the west coast of Africa. That volcano is ready to slide, half the western flank is ready to slide into the ocean. It has been disjointed, disconnected from the mountain proper ever since 1949, and all the scientists tell us in a brilliant, wonderful BBC documentary that their studies show that this island is like half a trillion tons, and it's ready to go. It's ready to slide as soon as their volcano begins to erupt, and the steam caught within those margins and channels in the mountain begins to emerge and reduce the gravitation. Reduce the frictional grip. It'll slide into the ocean. And scientists have now found out that landslide-driven tsunamis are about 10 times greater in amplitude than regular undersea earthquake-driven tsunami. So this thing may go in a matter of days or weeks or months. If that tsunami hits, here's what they estimate. The tsunami will, the first plop of the tsunami, and I was underestimated, actually. I thought they said the first plop in the ocean off the west coast of Africa when this thing slides in would be about two Empire State Buildings high, but I found out it's even more than that. Well, of course, it's going to level off epic through the deep ocean and travel across the sea ocean from the Atlantic toward the east coast of the Americas, the entire Americas.
John, unfortunately, we are already out of time. We're going to have to continue this another time. All right, my guest and I had been John DiNardo. He'd been talking about Planet X and the coming global cataclysms. All right, stay tuned. I've got Dr. Bob Kern coming up.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, and investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.